Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good morning. I'm Amy Eddings, sitting in for Brian Lehrer for The Brian Lehrer Show here on WNYC. Coming up in just a minute, we will be checking in on the very latest from Libya. Moving on the wires, a leading ratings agency has downgraded Libya's credit rating amid mounting violence in the oil-rich North African country. Fitch Ratings says it's cutting Libya to BBB from BBB plus and warned another downgrade may be in the offing. We are also hearing from British Petroleum, BP, saying it's very likely some of its employees in Libya will be evacuated in the coming days as the violent unrest spreads. So stay tuned for that. But first, let's dive into a topic that's much closer to home. Over the past few weeks, the USDA has approved a series of foods for market, a new type of alfalfa, a new sugar beet, and a type of corn used to produce ethanol. All three of them are genetically modified organisms, or GMOs, foods that have been fundamentally changed at a genetic level. What's more, the USDA has recently decided that these products can be sold as food without a label identifying their GMO status on the packaging. Michael Pollan, a food activist and author whose most recent book is called Food Rules, an Eater's Rulebook, joins us now to explore what GMOs are and what they mean for the future of our food. Michael, welcome back to WNYC. It's always great to talk to you.
Thank you, Amy. Good to be back.
We've heard the term GMO before. In fact, they've been on the market since the mid-90s. What were the rules governing GMOs and GMO labeling, and what has changed over the past few weeks?
Well, the rules have always been very light. When the products were first introduced, back at the end of the first Bush administration and the beginning of the Clinton administration, a decision was made by the FDA to essentially move toward a voluntary regulatory regime, which is to say the companies fill out a form with questions like, do you see any reason to worry about the health of this product? And if they would answer negative, they pretty much could introduce them. The USDA does have some authority to make sure that they're not going to do damage to the environment. But in general, the regulatory bar has been quite low, with the result that many of these products have entered the food supply, and we've been eating them for a long time.
What have we been eating so far? I know we'll be talking about the three latest additions, but
Genetically modified corn and genetically modified soy are probably the two biggest crops. These are generally, though, only indirectly in the food supply. I mean, most of it is fed to animals. It's animal feed. But corn that's processed into high fructose corn syrup, soy that's processed into, oils that we cook with, and all sorts of other soy products, if they're not organic, the chances are very good that they're genetically modified, because it's in about 80 or 90% of the conventional soy crop. There was another product, genetically modified potatoes, that Monsanto introduced in the 90s, and that product failed and was removed from the market after McDonald's announced that they didn't want to buy it anymore.
And it failed. Why? It failed to achieve its goals through the genetic modification?
No, I think it worked. I grew one of these actually in my garden, and I watched I watched a Colorado potato beetle, get sick and die on a leaf. So I think it was working, as far as I can tell. It was an experiment for an article I was writing. It died because when consumers realized that they were eating genetically modified potatoes at McDonald's and Frito-Lay, they had questions about it and weren't sure they wanted to do it, and they started writing the company. And as I understand it, the companies looked at the situation and said, there's really no advantage to us in selling these products, and there's a potential disadvantage if consumers are troubled by them. So why are we using these? And then they decided they wouldn't use them. And because McDonald's controls about 7% of the potato crop, and nobody wanted to segregate the potatoes, farmers stopped planting them very quickly.
So why are we genetically modifying our food? What's the advantage of genetically modified corn and genetically modified soy?
Well, I think you have to ask the question, advantage to whom?
Right.
There are, as yet, very few, if any, advantages for consumers. There may be some advantages for certain kinds of farmers. If you have a genetically modified field of corn or soy, it makes it easier to manage in some ways. You don't have to worry about a pesticide outbreak in one corner of your huge cornfield because every plant is going to be emitting pesticide 24/7. So that gives you a kind of security, and it allows you to get bigger, which I think in modern agriculture is a very important advantage. It's very hard to survive on a small farm, and farms have been consolidating and getting bigger and bigger, and GMOs makes it a little easier to expand your monoculture. So that is an advantage to farmers. And in the case of the Roundup Ready crops, which is probably the most important class of GMOs in terms of dollar value, it means that you can spray herbicide, weed killer, on your fields without killing the crop you're trying to grow. And that certainly makes life easier, as long as it works. The problem is that these Roundup Ready crops are not working as well because, as inevitably happens, when you put out too much of any kind of pesticide, the pests develop resistance, and that appears to be happening. I mean, it is happening in the case of the Roundup Ready crops. So, you know, the advantages as a matter of, for the public as a whole have not been very good. I think that these are kind of underwhelming crops so far. Maybe they'll figure out something really socially useful to genetically modify a crop to do.
Well, wouldn't it be socially?
But as yet they haven't.
Wouldn't it be socially useful to develop a crop like this potato crop, where it has a genetic resistance, or it's displeasing to a pest like a beetle, so you would not need pesticides in order to fight that beetle population?
Well, theoretically, that's a great idea, and that's what this crop did, but it didn't eliminate the need for other pesticides to deal with other bugs or diseases. So it's not as if, you know, you could have made a case that, yeah, if this potato really didn't need any pesticide, maybe it would be a safer potato to eat because it was still getting plenty of very toxic pesticides. The problem with potatoes is conventional ones are sprayed with all sorts of stuff, and the insecticides are the least of it. The fungicides are much worse. So theoretically, if you could actually develop crops that needed no chemicals, this might be an advantage. But it's important to understand that on balance, GMOs have led to the spraying of more pesticide, not less. And the reason for that is that the main crop has been this Roundup Ready crop. So Roundup is this weed killer, and we're spraying more of that than ever before because we have so many crops that have been made resistant to it. So far, GMOs have been, despite all the hype you hear, a way to sell more chemicals.
Yikes. You're listening to The Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC and on WNYC.org. I'm Amy Eddings in for Brian Lehrer on this President's Day, and we are speaking with food activist and author Michael Pollan about the rules, or lack thereof, of governing GMOs. What's changing for the USDA to suddenly start greenlighting all these new GMO products? Why have we seen a spate of new ones introduced?
You know, they're not all new, actually. The alfalfa was introduced a couple years ago, and then there was court action to stop it. And what's led to this reexamination is there's been some very successful litigation by people opposed to genetically modified crops, specifically the Center for Food Safety, which is a very lively, brash organization in Washington, has filed suit and managed to get these crops stopped on the grounds that, in the case of the alfalfa, they hadn't adequately considered the environmental impact or the impact on organic farmers. Because if you grow alfalfa, genetically modified alfalfa, the genes don't stay put. They migrate and they, pollinate other plants, with the result that you can contaminate an organic field. And you can't sell a field of organic crops if it has genes from GMOs in it. So it's potentially of great, you know, worry and damage to organic farmers. So this litigation, which prevailed in the Ninth Circuit out here in San Francisco, had stopped the deregulation of alfalfa, and the USDA was forced to do this environmental impact statement, which it did, and now it is approving based on that. But it's not out of the woods yet. I hear there's going to be more litigation. And what was discouraging about this particular episode is that Secretary Vilsack, the USDA secretary, had tried very hard to work out a compromise between a coexistence plan for GMOs and organic or conventional alfalfa farmers, providing for things like some geographic separation between fields so you wouldn't have this contamination. And it appeared that he was getting behind such a proposal, which would have been a very important precedent, I think. But he was overruled, I'm told, by the White House as part of their, you know, make no burdensome regulation initiative in their business-friendly mode. So they overturned that and basically gave the product a green light with the agreement to study the impact of this new crop on organic farmers, which seems to me something you want to study before you release it into the environment, not after.
Well, tell me about these new labeling rules. I think you outlined something very similar that happened decades ago in your book Omnivore's Dilemma about margarine, correct? This labeling it... This idea of, look, why
fake
not...
Foods.
Why? Yeah, fake foods. Why not label... If a company wants to create genetically modified products, and if a farmer wants to grow them and sell them, that's fine. Just let people know.
Yeah, let people
what's in
know.
Them.
That seems to me a kind of basic right that we have. That if they want a genetically modified food and sell it, okay, provided they're pretty sure it's safe. But why not tell us? Because there are a certain number of people who don't want to eat it. And their argument has always been that that would be burdensome, that it would create undue fear in people, because as soon as you told people about it, you would be implying there was something wrong with it. And, you know, for a lot of people, there is something wrong with it. But it seems to me this is a basic entitlement that consumers should have. This is a radical change to the food supply. It's sold on the basis of being a radical new technology. So, but suddenly when it's us, it's no big deal, and we should just eat it without question.
But how concerned should people be, though, about GMOs? The biggest fear around them that they could provoke surprise allergic reactions or transfer to humans, the antibiotic-resistant properties they're designed to carry, have not been borne out, right?
Well, you know, it's very hard to say because not much independent science has been done. The average person assumes that before they introduce something like that, they've, you know, fed it to thousands of rats and monkeys and watch what happens. But in fact, that's not what happened. They tested for allergenicity in test tubes. Common test to figure out if something creates an allergic reaction. If they did all those many, you know, long-term feeding studies, they haven't told us about it. And one of the things that's important to understand is if you're an independent researcher or scientist, you can't study these products because to buy the seed, you need to sign a contract that prohibits you from doing anything to them academically without Monsanto's permission. And Monsanto can decide what gets published and what doesn't get published. In fact, 2 years ago, a group of 36 entomologists signed a letter of protest to the USDA and Monsanto, saying that they could not vouch for the environmental safety of these products because they haven't been allowed to study them freely. Monsanto does the research, and Monsanto decides what we can see. So even though I haven't seen research that's persuaded me there's a serious health impact, I don't know how much that means, given that lots of independent researchers haven't had a chance to really examine it. So it's, you know, that's what concerns me. I mean, I'm inclined to fight on the ground of transparency and freedom to study these products, and then we'll see what's really going on. Do I have a reason not to eat GMOs? Only my desire to make a decision about what I'm going to eat, and we're not given that with GMOs, and that seems like a shame. They would say, well, there's no danger, so why specify it? Well, you know, there's no danger really in eating, let's say, French fries that have been cooked in with little bits of meat added, as McDonald's used to do to make their French fries taste really good. But vegetarians objected. And they had a right to object simply because they didn't want to eat meat with their French fries. And I think the same is true with GMOs. Even if your reasons are irrational, I think you should be able to make that decision for yourself. And the public would like that right. 80 to 90% of people in polls say they want GMOs to be labeled. And it doesn't seem like too much to ask.
And yet all this time, people who've been buying organic food, thinking that they were avoiding the whole GMO issue altogether, they've actually possibly have been buying products that have less than 5% GMOs in those products. Tell me about that and how that rule has been softened.
Well, there is a provision for a certain amount of contamination, both of pesticides and GMOs. It's not 5% of the whole product, though. It's a smaller amount than that. I'm not sure exactly how it works. And that this has been, since these genes are now in the environment and in tiny amounts do get into all sorts of crops, the USDA has been willing to cut a little bit of slack just to protect organic food manufacturers. It's a shame that they should have to make any compromise. But that's, pesticides drift also. So it's not to say that, basically if you want to avoid GMOs, organic is still the way to go. You will be eating, if any of them, a tiny, tiny amount. And so that is the only way you can really tell in the marketplace that you have a GMO-free product is buying organic.
I see. So that provision had less to do with organic food producers actually using GMOs,
but they were
getting the possibility of contamination from nearby fields that were.
When the organic rules were devised, in fact, the USDA in the first draft said, GMOs can be organic. And it was the organic industry and the organic consumers that rose up and, sent 300,000 or 400,000 letters to the USDA saying, no, we do not want GMOs in organic food. So they've really stood the ground. And in fact, this coexistence plan was that Vilsack was developing was developed in negotiation with some of the leading organic companies. So they're dead set on keeping GMOs out of their food. It's a very important principle of organic agriculture.
Right now we're just talking about plant products, but have you heard about this rapidly growing salmon? What the heck is that?
Well, this is the first genetically modified livestock, and it is probably going to be deregulated soon. And this is a salmon that's been engineered. I forget where they got the gene for it, probably from another kind of fish, but I'm not sure. That grows twice as fast as other farmed fishes and supposedly uses somewhat less feed per pound of gain. And this is going to be, it's going through the regulatory process. In this case, the FDA is involved, not the USDA. And it's expected to be approved. The Obama administration has put very few roadblocks in the way of GMO crops and has been generally extremely friendly to the industry. So I'm expecting it to be approved. Will there be a labeling requirement? Will you be able to tell? I don't know. It seems to me if this is such a superior product, why not boast about it?
Right.
But they don't want to. And so my guess is they're seeking to have it introduced without a label. And I think that that'll be a big fight. I think that there's a lot of political activism around labeling. Thus far in Congress, it's been very hard to get anyone but, a Dennis Kucinich, who's introduced a labeling bill every Congress since the mid-90s, to get behind it. This is one of those issues where both political parties are on the same side, which is to say on Monsanto's side.
Right. My final two questions for you, that's a very depressing assessment about the adage, write your congressman if you're outraged. What can somebody do at this point to express their viewpoint about this? It seems to me that so much of this is done behind the scenes through regulations that are made by the agencies themselves, that
and
where it's difficult for a voter to weigh in.
I think that's right. I mean, I think that, you know, when both political parties agree on anything in this country, it's very hard to have a political debate. Everybody falls silent. But there are lots of grassroots activists working on this issue. There's a very good group called Food Democracy Now. If you search their website, they've done petitions and various letters to the White House and to the FDA demanding labeling on these issues. And I think that that's a good way for people to express their views about it. I think it's important that the Obama administration hear from people. You know, they're hearing from Monsanto and their lobbyists, and they're not hearing enough from consumers. The alfalfa decision did generate, you know, a couple hundred thousand cards and letters, I'm told. So it's at a tipping point where we're getting involved is well worth doing. And fighting on the ground of labeling, I think, is exactly the right ground to fight on. It's important to remember that during the campaign, President Obama or candidate Obama said he supported labeling of GMOs. So let's go.
Secondly, I'm wondering whether where we will see some pushback is from Europe, which has fought this kind of stuff from American food producers before. Will we see the fight to get this changed coming from or even from developing countries where genetically modified products have really wreaked havoc on local farmers' abilities to feed themselves and to have make a viable living as farmers? Will we see some pushback coming from these arenas, if not from the home front?
Well, we do see it coming economically. The Europeans don't want our genetically modified products, nor do the Japanese. And one of the risks of contamination in this country, as happened in the rice area, is that if the crop is contaminated, we lose exports. And I think that that's an enormous economic price to pay for products that offer us so little. And it's very interesting, you know, GMO wheat has not been introduced yet. It has been developed. Monsanto has the product. But the wheat farmers of America got together and spoke as one and said, please, we don't want this product because it's going to cost us our export markets. We don't want what happened to corn. Corn lost a lot of their export markets when it was genetically modified. So, you know, there's a big economic risk to American agriculture by going down a path that, you know, in a globalized world, a lot of the globe doesn't want.
Right. And finally, Michael, if you want to avoid eating genetically modified organisms in your food, given that...
Buy organic. It's still a strong label, and there might be some marginal issues in some particular cases. But if you buy organic, you will be avoiding genetically modified food, and it's still a label you can count on. So I would say that's the most important thing. And also, there are crops that don't have it yet. I mean, wheat you don't have to worry about. Most vegetables have not been genetically modified yet.
Wasn't there a tomato that they were trying to develop some?
Yeah, and that failed in the marketplace. It was just a kind of crappy tomato. I mean, they managed to get the gene in there, but it just didn't taste very good. They used the wrong tomato.
Mm. Food activist Michael Pollan, thanks so much for joining us here on WNYC.
You're very welcome, Amy.
Coming up next, a look at the power dynamics in Libya and how the uprising there might play out. And at the end of the hour, we are going to play Stump the Presidential Historian. We will take your calls. Call in with two truths and one lie about any U.S. president and see if our historian can figure out which is the lie. Call us at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. Of course, the conversation about GMOs continues on our website, The Brian Lehrer Show at WNYC.org. I'm Amy Edding, sitting in for Brian Lehrer on this President's Day. Stay tuned.